Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I'm excited to bring you the thrilling update to the excavation in Turkey of ancient Egyptian artifacts with Dr. Carmen Bolter of the University of Calgary. Now, Carmen's five-part Netflix documentary series, The Pyramid Code, changed our understanding of life in ancient Egypt, and with her new documentary series, The New Atlantis, she's going to go even deeper. Now, we've received an amazing response on the exclusive reporting that we did in the first two episodes on this amazing find. In this special episode, we'll bring it all together with the Atlantis-Egyptian connection and how it all relates to the mysterious Hall of Records. History really is being changed right before our eyes. Here we go. Dr. Carmen Bolter, Atlantis to Egypt, the missing link discovered.
This question about Atlantis will not go away. The Hall of Records is about how we got here, the potency of the technology from Atlantis, the real secrets of personal empowerment is threatening to the deterioration of what's gone on now. The Hall of Records, it stands to reason that it would be material from another race, another time frame. That's what is in the Turkey find. So there's a big story here that's been hidden from us. Hidden, hidden, hidden.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm here with Dr. Carmen Bolter and even more exclusive images from this fantastic find in Turkey of ancient Egyptian artifacts. And I want to say right here that these images are being provided by Dr. Carmen Bolter exclusively to the Dark Journalist Show. You can't find them anywhere else, and we're definitely happy to have them. Now, Carmen, I want to mention to you that we've had a tremendous response to the first two episodes on this incredible find in Turkey of Egyptian artifacts, and I'm still getting tons of emails on it every day.
So am I.
Now, before we get started, I want to give a shout-out and say thank you to all of the independent sites who covered this story and really pushed it out there. There's over 300 of them so far, including ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.net, that's Alexandra Bruce, EventChronicle.com, ProjectAvalon.com, BeforeIt'sNews.com, that's Jeffrey Pritchett from the Church of Mabus Radio posting there, EducatingHumanity.com, TheHagmanReport.com, Galactic Connection, Disclose.tv, ShiftFrequency.com, Out of Mind, that's OOM2.com, DimensionsAndBeyond.com, Information-Machine.blogspot.com. Just incredible support, and we thank you for getting this story out. And I also want to thank you, the Dark Journalist subscribers, viewers, and supporters. We couldn't do any of this work without you. And unfortunately, you're not going to see this kind of amazing revelations on National Geographic, folks. But we certainly are going to do our best to bring you all the real news that's out there. Now, Carmen, there's a lot of fascination around this incredible find in Turkey and a lot of the implications of what it could mean. A lot of the revelations that it's bringing to the surface. It's really another incredible chapter in the great work that you've been doing. And I want to say that whenever your research has touched on that Amarna period, there seems to be just a little extra magic to it. There's some kind of special connection that you seem to resonate with and bring forward in all of this research. And of course, that royal line includes Queen Hatshepsut, the Pharaoh Akhenaten, his wife Queen Nefertiti, and of course, the boy king Tutankhamun, or King Tut. Now, it seems that you've discovered something very special about this period in terms of what it means and what it could mean for humanity. Can you tell us about it?
Well, what it is a percolation up of what was happening in Egypt before and what was happening in Atlantis. And so I think that Hatshepsut herself understood herself to be starseed, that somehow her father was overtaken by a being when he impregnated her mother. And she believes herself to have been a starseed, which many of us are. I think we come from the stars. I mean, this whole extraterrestrial thing, like, what does that mean?
Right.
And how are we here in the first place? But we have so much rhetoric in an effort to try to understand who we are. We're, you know, looking the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
And then Nefertiti and Akhenaten themselves, I mean, if they had the distended skulls and they were different beings, and who knows if they were far older, you know, and the beings were being you know, respected by a later generation, but still they also were starseed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what does it mean? And then all of the distended skulls that are being discovered all over the planet that usually pertain to giants. And, you know, and it's like a whole different level of humanity, if you will, or whatever you want to call it. And so I think that there's an incessant curiosity in people about who are we and where did we come from? And I think that's who your listenership is the people who just don't accept what we're being told.
Right.
And want a real answer. Well, what is the real answer? And the real answer is being, you know, swept under the carpet and hidden. And sooner or later, it's coming out. But, you know, even that turkey find, I think, you know, I was charging all my batteries. I was invited to come and do the shoot. And next thing we knew, they're kicking all the Americans out of Turkey and then closing the border and then this big flood of refugees.
Hmm.
You know, like what is that?
Well, it's obscuring this major find in a big way, for sure. But we're bringing some of this incredible discovery forward here, now. And I want to bring everyone up to date on what we've presented so far. So I'm going to play this presentation of the images we've released so far, and then we'll come back and discuss the reaction and show even more exclusive new images of this historic excavation. Here we go. Astonishing. Sarcophagus, highly resembling the one in Tut's tomb. Breathtaking in its detail. And here, the statues of Amenhotep III, Akhenaten, and assorted gods of ancient Egypt. Just staggering in its implication. Initial dating, 10,000 BC. Completely rewrites history. Now let's get into the new ones.
But there were some coins. Well, look at these. I mean, they almost look like Smarties. But there's ones that they're the exact thing from Knossos.
Amazing. They look like they're in excellent condition, and again, from a later time period here, so there may be a tradition of hiding artifacts in this mountain.
Until they basically had to stash it. Look at this for a bronze.
Oh, that is almost Grecian looking.
I know, it's just simply amazing. And all this goddess stuff.
Huh.
Sorry, this is how the pictures came to me.
Oh, do you ever wonder about your amazing luck in these matters? You seem to be a magnet for them.
Right? And so how that ended up in my, you know, hands is remarkable to me, you know, but it's true. So I was told that James Ernest Brown was sending me the 16 millimeter footage of lead scallion. The next morning is when these pictures started to come across in one of my meetings.
That's fascinating.
And, you know, and then when the geoscans guys, gag order was lifted, he contacted me. I mean, you gotta understand, for me, I'm like, how is this happening?
Unbelievable.
You know, it's totally great and amazing. And even the idea of where I'm called to go next, you know, in Europe, and there's possibly pyramids there. It's like, what is this? It's like, it's quite...
Well, you're getting all these signals as you bring Atlantis to the surface, it seems like.
So look at this one, even has an elephant from Atlantis. It's an Atlantean elephant. And this is a lamp that has two different spigots. This is the kind of stuff they're finding. Isn't it amazing?
Well, that these different finds are all related to one major excavation is very interesting.
And look at this.
What is that?
A miniature mummy.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, these are great. These are absolutely stunning. All right, we've saved the best for last. Evidence is pointing to the fact that this represents an Atlantean princess of extreme antiquity. The sarcophagus dating came back 10,000 BC. This could, in fact, be older.
Yeah, and let's just keep the conversation going here. This is a wooden life-size statue that must be Thai. So those are jewels inlaid into gold. Oops, same one. Look at the headpiece. Look at this stuff. Isn't that just incredible?
Wow.
I know, super wow. Okay, so go ahead. What were you
saying? Looking at an Atlantean crown.
Yeah, yeah, it's a crown that goes with this, and it goes with this outfit. So the jewels,
oh,
see
okay.
Those?
Okay, I see.
Breasts?
I see.
Maybe not, because she's on her side. But when you see I've seen other ones where it's actually those pants that gather at the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a life-size statue.
This, from all the data is an Atlantean princess.
Yeah.
The fact that she's linked with the Amarna artifacts is suggesting a lineage, perhaps Atlantis to Egypt. That's what it looks like. We're going to need to explore the gap of time from 10,000 BC to 1300 BC and Amarna, and that's Atlantis to Egypt, and who this Atlantean princess was, and the legacy into Egypt.
Well, and I always said that there was, you know, that the patriarchal Egypt started in 3113 BC, coinciding with the Mayan calendar. Let's not forget that. And then became increasingly patriarchal and less spiritual. But then in the 18th dynasty, something started to percolate up with Hatshepsut. And there was also something going on with the solar flares that were preventing boys from surviving. And Morris Cotterell talks about that. So fertility was definitely in question, and a lot of the boys were stillborn, which is why they were having trouble finding somebody for the throne. But they were also returning to the Aten instead of the Amun, right?
Exactly.
It means darkness, and we still say Amen, which I won't say. Yeah, I think that they were percolating up a memory, and they broke away from and closed the temples because it was corrupt. And on that note, you know, God sent the flood because the Atlanteans were mixing their DNA animals, and, you know, and you've seen a human ear growing on the back of a rat now.
Right.
And so if corruption is causative for a flood, that's not exactly adding up now, because we sure have enough corruption.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to have many questions on these incredible artifacts.
Yeah.
And more research is being done as we speak. But what an incredible collection that will really change our perspective on ancient Egypt and Atlantis forever. Just amazing stuff, Carmen. Okay, so that's a pretty good cross-section there of what has been presented so far here on Dark Journalist. Now, for the full context of how the dating by traditional Egyptology could be so far off, over 8,000 years, you've actually spoken extensively about a cover-up in archaeological circles regarding ancient Egypt, and especially this Amarna period. Now, can you go into that here? Because it may affect the historic find in Turkey as well.
Right. Now, the discovery of King Tut's tomb is part of it. But there's a lot of corruption that went on with that, too. You think Howard Carter didn't help himself to a lot of the stuff.
Right, right.
And most people don't know that he was covered in blue lotus flowers when he was found. And he does have a distinct skull, but most people aren't noticing that, as did a lot of the high court there.
It is so unusual.
And the beings that they found that they say were Nefertiti. But we'll never know about that either.
Right.
So there really has to be a combination between some real things and memories. But who's going to spend that much time focusing on it?
Yeah.
Pretty much anything and everything that's been said about it, Don, is just wrong. Including at that press conference that Zahi Hawass was, you know, saying that he had malaria, yeah, and he had a club foot, and he had a hair lip, and it's all the medical model.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the DNA? Now, most people don't know that the traveling King Tut exhibit is all fake, because the King Tut stuff stays in Egypt.
That's fascinating.
Just like a lot of discoveries that are made in Egypt, in the Zahi era, everybody would have to stop working. Zahi would come along and say, look what I discovered.
Oh, boy.
Everything was his.
Hmm.
So, the corruption is immense in all of this. But what was taken already before? But the thing is they didn't understand what that material was. And those Faraday cages, if you will, and the so-called mummification beds, and why they had gold shoes, and how that was all the electric ancient Egyptian work of James Ernest Brown, who really, I think, made some pretty important discoveries about what they were doing, and then took it to the lab, and then did some experimentation to see if his theoretical position would work. You know, so it's much, much more than going, I'm right because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot more. But what was the threat? Why do they have to trash Akhenaten?
Mm-hmm.
And discount? And then why were there so many girls? You know, I think we've mentioned this before, Maurice Cotterell's work.
Yes.
Roller
cycles. The flares, yeah.
Making it more difficult for males to incarnate and stay healthy.
Well, this is just the kind of thing that helps us to understand that period and the challenges happening there. that we just won't find in textbook archaeology. Now, I want to say that your 30-plus years of doing these excavations, documentaries, and deep research on ancient Egypt really gives your work an edge. To have that on-the-ground experience is something for which, in my opinion, there's just no substitute. Now, in a major find like this, Akhenaten and Nefertiti objects in Turkey, without the establishment backing it, and National Geographic specials and all the rest, there's going to be people out there who'll say, well, how can it be real? How can it date to 10,000 BC? This can't be happening. And I just go back to your expertise with these objects. You know, you have the experience, you understand ancient Egypt, and also you've seen on the ground, on the establishment side, and also hoaxers too. So you know the difference. And I would remind everyone listening that has a hard time seeing Egypt going back to 10,000 BC that the Göbekli Tepe site in Turkey, which you hear so much about now, was actually found in the early 90s. And the media, you know, hasn't covered it for 20 years. And now suddenly they're covering it on a limited basis. And they still haven't acknowledged how this 10,000 BC dating changes everything and really throws out the model that we're using for archaeology. So we can't hang around for them. Now, I trust your expertise and the feeling that you have when you know that you have a history-changing find on your hands.
Well, and thank you for that. And it is a feeling. Now, there was someone who sent me a video that they had found on Facebook that was similar in a very uncanny way.
Yes.
So there was a sarcophagus, and there were the Shapti dolls, and there were statues and various things. And to me, it looked like a movie set.
Oh.
Done by someone who's not fine-tuned to the information. Now, when you're in Egypt, if you go to a papyrus factory, or, you know, they paint the columns and they've got some ordinary person trying to replicate the posture or, you know, even the temple pillars. And it's wonky. It's not real. It's in a way, it's kind of sickening because it
right.
doesn't keep that precision. And, you know, Chris Dunn's work with the, he calls it the Ramses face, but actually it's Amenhotep III, and he admitted that. But the proportion of everything. And in Egypt, everything is proportional.
Mm-hmm.
So when the proportions are slightly off, to me, it just doesn't resonate, and I get a really strong reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I could point out bit by bit between this fake video and the real one where the problems are. Because I've been looking at these pictures. I mean, I went to Egypt the first time in 77, and I've been poring over the pictures. And that's also how James Ernest Brown did his research in 78.
Yes.
He's got 15,000 pictures. I have 20-some thousand. And you just look and look and look, and you can see if something's fake.
That is so fascinating. And that's an internal process, really, because your eye has developed to a point where you can now recognize these fine details in ancient Egyptian artwork. So for you, you can spot a fake almost easily now. Now, this other video that you mentioned, and we've seen these floating around, it almost comes off like a caricature of the videos and images that you have. My first thought was that it was an early bootleg taken on a cell phone, because we know this dig has been underway for a few years. But with you saying that it looks like a staged version of the original, that really resonates, and it gets us into a very strange place. Because we have to wonder now if it's an attempt to cover up or exploit this authentic discovery that you're involved in.
Well, it's definitely uncanny.
Yeah.
That it's even there. And it's got the similarity of like a cave and things being thrown in. But, you know, like the other thing that really gets to me is when you see a reenactment of Egypt and people aren't standing with that posture. And when you see the bands around the top of their arms and their wrists and ankles, that was so they didn't get, I call, electromagneticated.
Uh-huh.
But any reenactment of Egypt that I see, they're all kind of hunched over. And, you know, if that energy came through them and they were like that, it would wipe them out.
Sure.
They wouldn't survive it. And so, you know, there's a blend here between past life memory and just spending decades looking at the stuff. But there's a feeling that comes off it as well.
Oh, there's no question. But you've also told me that whenever we get around these Amarna figures and the displays of their artifacts, strange things do happen. You know, I remember the story of when they moved King Tut's mummy and there was a huge blackout in Cairo. So there's something about the objects around this royal Amarna lineage.
But that, there was a Hatshepsut. There was the first time that all her statues were together since the find, because somebody took all her statues and threw them in a pit and they all broke as they fell in. Mm. And then an American team came along and found them, and then they ended up distributed all over the world.
Right.
And so it ended up at the Metropolitan Museum, and I've got a full film shoot of it. And it's interesting because it's happened to me before, even when I went to see the real Nefertiti in Berlin. The watchmen see me and they walk out of the room and leave me there by myself.
Interesting.
I know. It's just so touching because the minute there's another consciousness there, it interferes with the Egyptian stuff. And to be alone with all those Hatshepsut statues, I mean, and with Nefertiti, I'd start crying. I mean, it just brings me to tears. It's just so powerful. But when several of those statues did leave the Cairo Museum to join this collection, and as I said, I photographed the whole thing extensively, but they never went back to Egypt.
Wow. Amazing. Oh, I find that very disturbing somehow.
It's totally disturbing. There's a lot of disturbing things about Egypt.
Yeah, there's no question. Now, before we get to showing some more of these incredible exclusive images, I want to touch on some of your more intuitive moments when you've been in the field investigating these ancient mysteries. Now, one incident we should really talk about had to do with an amazing moment of realization around this idea of a sacred ritual involving this birthing pool. Now, some of the information you were getting around this image was very interesting.
Oh, it's totally interesting. And so I thought it was Knossos, and it's interesting because when I have certain memories, I want to place it somewhere, and I call it patching until I can actually ascertain 100% that that's, maybe 85%, whatever. But that's what I think and where it could have happened. I make up a place. Mm-hmm. So this birthing pool that I kept seeing, I thought was at Knossos. And maybe there were similarities because I think there's a relationship between the ancestry at Knossos and the ancestry in Egypt. But when I got to Amarna and we were where the North Palace is, there were six of us and Hakim was there. And there was this woman, and she just burst into tears when she saw the birthing pool. And as she was crying, I could see that the birthing pool was turning to blood.
Huh.
And she was a midwife. Or she recalled herself to possibly have been a midwife during that period of time. And there were so many stillbirths, and the boy babies weren't surviving. And then it all fell into place, that all those memories that I had ascertained were Knossos, actually were there. But I had no way of knowing. I had no context to put it in. So I put it in a context that I had. That's why I think we shouldn't be concluding.
Yes.
Too quickly that something is somewhere. You know, until I figure out the rest of it, it looks like it could be here.
Right.
And so that's why there were no boy children. Now, we're already in dynastic Egypt, but they were starting to function like the matriarchal aspects, like Atlantis could have been. So Amarna was like a replica, if you will, of the social nature of the, I call it flattening of the hierarchies. So it's not the big boss and, you know, the little people who do all the work and the big guy that gets all the money. You know, and we've had that. And that's why I've said it many times, the agenda of the patriarchy is to erase evidence of everything other than itself.
Hmm.
Right? And so, and then there's this little percolation that comes up through Hatshepsut and that comes up through the Amarna period, but they would have most certainly been great-grandchildren of each other, great-grandparents, direct lineage. And that's what a dynasty is. It goes through the same family until that family expires, and that's what the mitochondrial DNA is all about. And that's why even in pharaonic Egypt, the pharaoh would marry the daughter of the pharaoh before him to keep the mitochondrial DNA, which is all matrilineal.
I see.
Right? And even though it's dynastic and patriarchal Egypt, they still had to keep that matrilineal line because they understood what it meant. Right? And that's how we can trace things. So You know, what is the political agenda for us thinking Akhenaten's crazy?
Right.
You know, and they're trying to say, well, you know, they just mix it all up.
It's fascinating the way it's portrayed with that ever-present slant against Akhenaten. And this brings us back to this explosive finding in Turkey of ancient Egyptian artifacts looking very similar to this Amarna period, but dating to 10,000 BC. So let's go down this road a little here. Let's say that the early dating holds up and you're able to get an even bigger investigation going on these artifacts. The probable reality is over 8,000 years of difference between what archaeology has given us, that Akhenaten and Nefertiti and Tut date back to 1300 BC, and what this discovery proves, that Amarna actually dates to 10,000 BC. So are we looking at the first Akhenaten at 10,000 BC and the last one in 1300 BC? Now, this is a key breakthrough. The other thing that substantiates your idea of Nefertiti fleeing Egypt when the corrupt Amun priesthood was coming for Akhenaten and hiding these artifacts in Turkey is that she's not represented in the Turkey find, but the whole period of Amarna is.
That's why I think, well, it's part of why I think it had something to do with her.
Yes.
Right.
But it could be more than 8,000 years. But the other thing is that there's other finds along the Silk Road. There's all of these treasure maps, and you go up through the mountains, and there's pathways with arrows and things. And I'm sure the treasure map, when you see this, then turn left and go up and around. And we stash this stuff over there, so the treasure maps would have had as much value. But so much gold, coins, gold bars, just incredible. But if you look at the entirety of the collection, of which I have 147 pictures that were sent to me, seven some videos, which have bazillions of artifacts, and some of these photographs have like 100 pieces in this, it's matriarchal. And it's all based, like my book, Angels and Archetypes, an Evolutionary Map of Feminine Consciousness, goddesses. We've got Medusa, we've got Artemis, they're recognizable, there's angels flying around, there's bare-breasted women, and that would have been, you know, matriarchal. There's certain things about matriarchy, spirals, red, white, and black, you know, virgin, mother, crone, the virgin being the white, the mother being red, and the crone being black. But this was all part of the goddess-centered traditions that are all buried deeper. Because older is deeper in archaeology. Archaeology started in 1910. And so they're pulling all the surface stuff, which is all the patriarchal stuff. Arrowheads and spears and all that sort of thing. Right? So that's all the patriarchal, let's go blow it up and kill it. You know? But that's not what was going on before us.
Well, this is intriguing because we're looking at cover-ups in archaeology from different angles. You know, on one hand, we have the dating back to 10,000 BC and beyond that destroys their version of history. And then we have this cover-up of the goddess-centered civilizations and their teachings. But this is what I find fascinating. The Amarna find in Turkey that we've been so heavily focused on here really speaks to people on this other kind of subtle level. And it's almost like they recognize the powerful nature of this discovery. Now, one of the comments from a guy writing from France, you know, he was saying he felt he was getting water after being thirsty for years. This is the kind of reaction and impact that I think you're having with this historic find. And the new Atlantis is going to open up a whole new avenue of awareness around our ancient past. I'm excited. The Dark Journalist viewers are certainly excited. This is so important. You know, we're at a real turning point here. We need, in this world of independent research, independent media, to get behind these real, bona fide discoveries. You know, we need to lock into something that is provable. And I'll try to make the point here without getting too specific, but there's really a big wave of very, let's say, unverifiable claims, Flat Earth, Corey Good, all that flotsam and jetsam swirling around and degrading the conversation on many levels. And here we are with your unique work. We know real archaeology has been blocked. This is a major breakthrough. So let's get behind this discovery. Let's get behind Carmen's work. Let's get behind this show. You know, share it and make sure this discovery is seen far and wide whether someone can accept the dating or not, make sure they get the chance to see it. I think we need to ask ourselves, are we going to let 2017 be another year of PR in the mainstream media? And in alternative circles, you know, Tom DeLonge and fantasy novels masquerading as UFO truth and Coast to Coast becoming a paranormal dating service. You know, this is dark journalism. I don't know what the other stuff is. But as dark journalist, I'm looking for the truth, and so are you. Okay, when we come back, Carmen, the new exclusive images from this historic find in Turkey. Atlantis, Amarna, Starseed Connection. Changing history, right here with Dr. Carmen Bolter. Stay with us.
Dark Journalist subscribers renew early and save. For a limited time, you can go to darkjournalist.com/renew and renew your subscription at the discount rate of just $39 for one full year. Lock in last year's discount for a savings of $30 and get the shows you want to hear at this special discount. Don't miss out. Renew early and save by going to darkjournalist.com/renew or use the renew link on the member page. See you there.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Dr. Carmen Bolter. Carmen's five-part Netflix series, The Pyramid Code, really shook up the archaeological world. Her new series, The New Atlantis, set for release later this year, is really looking at evidence for the lost continent of Atlantis, and she puts it in a whole new way. And in the midst of all this, the incredible discovery of Egyptian artifacts from the Pharaoh Akhenaten, Tutankhamun, and the Amarna period in Turkey. So we're providing you an up-close, exclusive, early look at this groundbreaking excavation. And you can be sure that after we show you these new exclusive images, we're going to do a fourth installment, and there's more there. So stay up to date with us by going to darkjournalist.com and signing up for our newsletter so you don't miss any of the important information that we have coming up for you. Now, Carmen, you're going to be showing some fascinating images from this Turkish discovery. And while we're queuing that up, can you tell me how you feel about people writing to you, you know, from all over the world and sharing their impressions of these artifacts? You're finding there's a special kind of quality to the reaction that you've been getting, as if people are starting to penetrate to that next layer of understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. But the people are most enthused about academics meeting metaphysics.
Yes.
And they're like, how did you get away with that? Well, you know, we have to keep ourselves intact and we have to follow our own, you know, path. I mean, it's the mission that we, you know, most people are disconnected from their own personal mission. Mm-hmm. Nothing in school encourages us to find that. And then everybody buys into the fear about not traveling and CNN mentality, the only place you're safe is on your own couch. People end up disconnected, but it's not very satisfying for them. You know, like this question about Atlantis will not go away.
Right.
And if people haven't heard something before, I mean, they expect just complete recycling of everything. You just, you know, like with the turkey find, people, well, I went online, I didn't see anything about a turkey find. Well, because it's not out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't find it online. It's like people, you know, people have got stopped really thinking. And yeah, there's a lot of just regurgitate. And that's what school teaches people to do, is hear what the teacher says and say it, repeat it. And so we've got all these people listening to certain sources of media and repeating it.
How frustrating is that, though, if you're on the verge of this incredible find, you're working with this material, and somebody says, oh, I didn't see it on CNN today. It's not on National Geographic, so, you know, I'll wait till those guys verify it for me.
Well, we know that they're all, start to meme about fake news.
Right, exactly.
Who's fake?
Yes.
Have to fit on a ticker tape going across. And it's all lies.
Yeah.
But people have disconnected from their own, whether something is true meter. You know, we need to have an internal, resonance to see if something's true for us or if something fits. And that's why I think the Pyramid Code was overwhelming to people, because they didn't feel all messed up by it.
Yes.
You know, like if you watch some of these documentaries, yes, no, and everything's opposite, and anything about food, eat eggs, no, don't eat the white, don't eat the yolk, don't eat them at all, they're perfect food. Like anything, you can find the contradictions.
Yeah, oh, sure, sure.
You know, the rules keep changing. The people who make rules love to change the rules. And so people don't even know how to sift things through anymore. But we end up with all this cognitive dissonance when, you know, the headline of an article has the opposite of it in the article. You know, whatever it says at the beginning of the article, they're saying the opposite at the end. And so people just give up and go, I don't know.
Right.
And then here comes the product in the commercial and they go, okay, I'll go buy one of those. You know, unconsciously. And so it's worked. Like whatever the system has done to disconnect people from the truth has worked.
Mm-hmm.
Which is tragic, as we've talked about before.
Absolutely.
So how do we come back? And yet, you know, people just won't let it go. So when people feel that they're being fed information that sits well inside them, it fits with their deep sense of knowing, which is what Hakim was trying to talk about, then they relax.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel they have to tell me.
Right, exactly. That's when you get your best feedback. Now, if we're going to get the full gist of the Amarna find in Turkey and the links to Atlantis in this 10,000 BC date for the artifacts, then let's deal here with the Hall of Records that the Atlanteans were supposed to have put in the very heart of Egypt after their land was destroyed. Now, this is very interesting because it's a theme in esoteric literature, you know, the Emerald Tablets of Hermes. And the psychic Edgar Cayce, who helped to really reinvigorate this whole notion, placed this Hall of Records under the left paw of the Sphinx. So to their credit, you know, the Cayce organization has tried to get some digs under the Sphinx and were basically manipulated by Zahi Hawass and others. Now, Casey's version puts the Hall of Records in three different places, Yucatan, Bimini, and under the Sphinx. It's interesting to note here that although he's known for saying that the hall was under the Sphinx, he saw that as more of an entrance, and he said that the actual Atlantean Hall of Records was between the Sphinx and the Nile River, in a pyramid, he said, of its own. Now, we don't hear that part too often. So my question is, what is your feeling, intuitively and otherwise, about this Hall of Records?
Well, long answer to a big question. And let's also put the caveat on that if channeled material is 85% correct, there could be a little funny business in there. And, okay, so, okay, now this, when I lived in Egypt, I had a retreat center, and I called it the Hall of Records Retreat Center.
That's great.
And so I've been looking for this for a long time. Now, I think there's, because of linguistics as well, and how prepositions can change the meaning of words, and my PhD is in computational linguistics. So, you know, the Chinese people sit in a chair, we sit on a chair.
Yes.
Right? So when Edgar Cayce said, under the paw of the Sphinx, I was saying beneath and in front of, and the river used to just go there, but now, so circling all around, Lake Moeris came all the way to where the Nile was, in my understanding, geologically speaking, and that's where Hawara is.
Hmm.
So I spent years, 5 years, in and out of the tunnel system on the Giza Plateau, having chased after this story that I'd heard in 1996 at the Star Visions conference by Chelsea Floor, who was on the team with John Anthony West and Boris Syed and all of them that were doing the sledgehammer and the little arrow thing and drilled a hole. And I mean, this is primitive technology.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a cavity? Well, how big's the cavity? And well, there's a spaceship down there. Well, there's books down there. Well, what is down there?
Wow. Now,
Emerald Tablets, you know, a Hall of Records, of which there may have been more than one. What is it? Okay. So if, let's say, we came from off planet and had starships and, you know, stuff, where would you put it? How do you acclimate coming from a different vibrational frequency on another planet? Where do you go to decompress? It's almost like being underwater. And if you go up too fast and then fly in a plane in 15 years, retinal detachments. Mm-hmm. Not something that looks direct, but the change in the pressure system and the different atmosphere is really significant. So it could be, and this is what we're finding in Huara with the geoscans, is this huge depth of, you know, that look almost like storehouses that don't connect with each other on two distinct levels, which to me says two distinct time frames, because older is deeper, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we could see water in front of the sinks, it doesn't mean it was the Nile if you go back 60,000 years or something. And Hawara is 30, I can't remember now, but many kilometers, much, much farther from the Nile than, say, Dendera, Abydos, again, older is farther from the Nile, right? And so having, you know, gone on several expeditions, a desert expedition, when somebody suggested that, you know, the Hollow records of connections to Atlantis, and it ended up being an Air Force target.
Right.
So I've been chasing after this for a long time.
There's no question. You have a strong connection to this Hall of Records. And I have to say that with the redating of the Sphinx to 10,500 BC by geologist Robert Schock, the discovery of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, also dating at 10,000 BC, your work in the Pyramid Code on this older date for Egypt, and now this explosive find in Turkey of Egyptian and goddess artifacts, I'm feeling like we're really closing in now on this Atlantean message. Now, tell us about the new images we're going to be looking at here today.
Now, what you're going to see is the Knossos stuff, too. So there's not just the picture. And I think that on Crete, it's the closest we've got to the remnants of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. The way they dress, the acrobats that they're doing, the acrobatics that they're doing with the animals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that that is particularly interesting. And again, there's that goddess-centered thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I remember that in terms of linking things to my past life stuff, when I first went there in 1977, I remember reading the sign and it said the Palace of King Minos. So I'm a kid, I'm 20-something. And I go, King? What do you mean, King? Right. Who's that? Who are you talking about? I was just so, you know, indignant, you know. And then I had a little conversation with myself, like, what do you mean? How do you know? Right. But then there was a showcase in the museum, and it had something that kind of looked like a safety pin, but it was a pin that would allow a rectangular woven fabric to gather at various spots to make fashion. And this pin was 3,000-5,000 years old. I remember my vision tumbled into the case, and I just went, that was somebody's from then. And something grabbed me. This is at the beginning of my book, and pulled me outside. And I was taken up to where it was just like an empty space. And I said, something happened here. Something used to happen here. And it was this wonderful view of the site, but that, and there was everything, there was nothing there, like nothing. Not a building, not a tree, nothing. So then I made a pledge to myself that I would keep looking until I figured out what that spot was.
Yeah.
And went and researched all this stuff, and I found a map of Knossos from ancient times, and that's where the sacred grove was. Priestesses would do their rituals naked in this oak grove, and the Christians came along and chopped all the trees down. But something in me knew it already, and that's the essence of how I do my research.
Well, I think your intuitive edge around these discoveries is going to lead us further into this labyrinth of mysteries. Now let's go ahead here and take a look at these exclusive images, never before seen, from this landmark discovery.
So these were part of the Turkey find? And if you look at that and then notice, I'm just trying to get some coordination here. Look at this. Does that not remind you of the same thing? from Knossos. Now, the other thing is you're not in a warring situation if you spend that much time on your hair.
Right. I know, they're looking great.
So, look at this.
This is fascinating. It's almost like a victory cup.
But it's all jeweled. Like, incredibly, incredibly neat. And that, so these came in both silver and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Back of it is an owl.
Oh.
Which is really speaking to the idea of Artemis and all of that. Now, where's the rest of this? Oh. And this is a falcon made out of 8,000 diamonds.
Yeah, it's incredible. That's almost like Assyrian or something.
Well, I would have guessed Persian.
Persian, yeah.
Okay. So, it's quite fascinating. I thought there were a few more here.
These are incredible.
They are incredible.
The range of style, I think, is so interesting.
Absolutely. But there were some things. There's all that electric ancient Egyptian stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some of these. We'll even look at these vases. Look at them. They're like ancient Fimo.
Oh, yeah. Those are fascinating.
So these aren't all in order, but there's stuff from, like, Artemis. See, there's the coins. This is just the whole collection. These tiny books.
What are these bearded men? What's going on there?
Well, that's just a huge tapestry. But they've got the feather, and that's a snake wrapped around him.
Mm. This is like Atlantis imagery when I see that.
Well, we don't really... It's hard to say where it's all from, but it is part of the find.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's... I'm looking for that. I thought I'd copied them. Artemis and Medusa, straight out of my book. All the goddess-centered stuff. This, well, I think I showed you this last time. That's like an emerald the size of a credit card.
Let's see that one.
So I'll take a screenshot of it, and then I'll put it in the folder for you.
Yeah, that is incredible.
Well, there's so much riches, and then there's, you know, suitcases full of gold bars and amazing things. But look at this thing. I'm going to rotate this a couple of times. Rotate clockwise. And then rotate it again. Now, they said this was 40,000 years old. Found in the Amazon. Like, the Amazon warrior women.
Mm-hmm.
In their stash. Look at that.
Oh, it does. It does look like this.
The victory pass.
Yeah, right.
Incredible stuff.
Fascinating.
Yes, and then there's all these mosaics on in the ground here. This is one of them. This is like pure goddess-centered stuff.
Oh, right.
With little angels. I'm going to put these into the folder. And look at this, is Medusa. There's a Medusa right there.
Oh, yeah. Right in the middle.
And that's a hair comb, right? And then one more of Artemis here. With, you know, so she's a virgin goddess with many breasts. And all that stuff from Knossos. The women are bare-breasted.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three I was looking for. So you can't say, you know, that it's not goddess-centered.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're bare-breasted, I mean, it's just simply incredible. And like I said, no warring stuff, almost no boy stuff.
And now there is the picture of the Atlantean princess, which we have shown. And one of the things I think is so important about that one is that you've talked about this posture, that this was a standing statue of a kind of regal princess from Atlantis.
Well, it would have been standing, but that was lying down just simply because it was stuffed into a stash.
I gotcha.
But it would have had to have been a standing posture. But it just, these things are all just thrown around in a cave.
Right, right, yeah.
But it really did look Thai because of the hand position, the headdress, and the pants were kind of gathered at the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a Thai style.
Just amazing. And of course, for context, here's the original shot of the find with Akhenaten and Amenhotep III. Same location here, which suggests a massive hideaway of ancient artifacts related to Atlantis and goddess symbolism, really. This is a massive, largely untapped excavation site in a mountain in Turkey.
Now, the Turkey find that has the 10 rooms inside the mountain that they locked is the gold Nefertiti Akhenaten with a lot of other rooms that they hadn't opened. They had only opened 4 of the 10.
Just amazing. I can only imagine what else is hiding out there. And speaking of hiding out, are the investigators and the Turkish treasure hunters safe? And what kind of a status update can you give us on them and the site? Are there any indications that they had to hand the material over to the military?
I have no information that they had to give it away. My information is that it was locked and it wasn't safe for them to go back.
Fascinating. Well, it makes sense with the military turmoil in that area right now, but it is the team that locked the site, right? It's not the military.
Yep.
Okay, that's good.
Like, I had personal contact with the people who found it.
Good. I hope to hear that they have access again soon. Carmen, just amazing. And as we close out this episode, I noticed a lot of Knossos and Crete-style imagery in this batch. Now, can you tell us the significance of the Atlantean colonies in this context?
All the pictures, they're matriarchal and they're gold. And all of that stuff that we saw, the bare-breasted women from Knossos. Knossos has been associated with Atlantis, the bull riding, acrobatics, all that kind of stuff. So I think that what's at Knossos is the closest that we have of some kind of colony of people that were related to the Atlanteans somehow. Hot and cold running water, 2-3-story temples, just a huge sophistication of commerce and art that you just don't see anywhere else.
It's likely to be, if we can connect these dots, we've got Atlantean colonies here. And that's what we'll explore in the next episode on this history-changing find. Just incredible. And I want to remind everyone that the next episode will hold some major new finds on this. Dark Journalist subscribers will get that episode in their inbox when we're done. Now is the time to subscribe, and we'll offer that discount for March. This is the information you're going to need. I also want to remind everyone that you can take part in the New Atlantis documentary by supporting Carmen's GoFundMe page for finishing that landmark achievement. That is gofundme.com/ the New Atlantis. Now, if you want to take a larger role, you can contact Carmen directly at pyramidcode.com. Carmen, thank you. And we're all going to spread the word of your incredible discovery far and wide. When I think of the amazing series of events in your life that led you to this history-shaking, kind of paradigm-breaking time, I wonder, really, how you got there. It's very interesting.
So this is, it's pretty interesting. I don't know how I got here either.
Well, we're glad you did. Now, let's check in shortly here for the fourth installment in this series and major new discoveries. Thank you so much for the incredible information.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode on Atlantis to Egypt, the missing link discovered with Dr. Carmen Bolter. You can find more deep interviews, documentaries, and special reports at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.
Subscribe to our newsletter at darkjournalist.com to stay updated on the latest shows.